Ulf would not have wanted death for his brother.
It was Tige who spoke now, his voice still somewhat breathless.
Your kinsman was keenly interested in the teachings of my own faith, and we spoke long of such matters. He valued the philosophy of forgiveness and the sanctity of human life. God pardons all sins, even the murder of a brother, if we turn to him. Ulf would have wanted Somerla to have a chance to seek God's grace, to repent of his wrongdoing. He would have wished that, even though he spoke also of how much he feared his brother and the havoc that Somerla might wreak if there was no one to check him.
Tell me,
Magnus said, fingering his neatly trimmed beard and frowning.
Do you see something in this man that I cannot see? I have known Somerla a long time, since he came to Freyrsfjord as no more than a boy, and proved himself most able in a courtier's arts, poetry, games, law-speaking, and even, to an extent, the wielding of sword and bow. A year or two ago, I would have said he was a young man of great potential, who had yet to rise above certain flaws of character, shall we say, which held him back. Today I am not so sure. You speak of learning, Lady Margaret. Perhaps such a man cannot learn. It seems to me entirely just that, having established his own rule of law here, he should himself be subject to it. Would you not wish satisfaction for your husband's cruel death?
My lord, said Margaret quietly, I would wish that the penalty this man pays be appropriate to his wrongdoing. An execution is quick, in its way merciful. Death is what he wants. It is the easy way out. Magnus was silent for a time, while low-pitched conversation hummed around the hall. Rona was bringing water for Margaret, watching Hawkeye as she finished every drop. It must end soon, Avon thought. One way or another, they must end it. Somerled stood very still, maintaining his poise, his impassive gaze turned in the direction of Magnus and Olaf. His hands were laced together in front of him, the fingers were tight, the only sign that he was less than perfectly comfortable. In times past, he had considered Margaret a worthy opponent, but he had never liked to concede a point.
This presents a difficulty, Magnus said. Still, no problem is without its solution. We have not yet asked the Lady Nessa for an opinion, yet she, of all those present tonight, can most truly pass judgment on what Somerled has done in these islands. It is her own people who have suffered under his brutal rule, a land that has labored under the yoke of his tyranny. She is not only the royal princess of this place, but also a wise woman, able to touch what lies beyond the shadows. That we saw last night, when she conjured my lost kinsman's voice for all to hear. Let us seek her wisdom here, and that of the elder priestess, her companion. This decision is, I believe, beyond the reach of our own knowledge. Will you speak, my lady?
Nessa had been translating in a whisper for Rona. Avon's breath caught in his throat as she rose to her feet, now clad not in the strange and wondrous gown of last night, but in a plain blue tunic and skirt, the everyday garb of the island woman. Her hair was severely plaited down her back. She wore no adornment save the narrow cord that bound it, no jewelry, no finery. Yet she seemed to him entirely lovely, completely wondrous, as if each time he looked on her she had grown in beauty and power. My lord, I thank you for your courtesy, Nessa said gravely. But I can in no way do as you ask. Were this man on trial for the great wrong he has done to my people, the slaughter and maiming, the abduction of the innocent and helpless, the disregard for the ancestors, whose bones are the deep fabric of the islands, I would indeed pass judgment. I would say to him, go free, for your freedom will be short indeed. The ancient powers of the Light Isles will not allow such a creature of evil to walk along unscathed on these fair fields, on these bright shores. But the charge Somerled faces tonight is not within any authority of my own people to judge. He answers here only for the murder of his brother, an offence in which both perpetrator and victim are of your people. It is a matter for your law and your judgment." There was a brief silence. They appeared to have reached an impasse. Somal had folded his arms and shifted his weight from one foot to the other. Nessa's words, it seemed, had penetrated the facade of calm.
"Odin's bones," he snapped. "Are we to be here all night? It is plain, is it not, why I instituted new rules to expedite the conduct of legal hearings? It would be simpler by far."
"I'm not finished," Nessa said softly, turning her wide grey eyes directly on Somalid's face. There was something there that rendered him instantly silent, something Avon thought was ancient and wise and extremely dangerous. A chill went up his spine. "I understand the difficulty you face," Nessa went on, "and I will offer you a solution. Sometimes a problem arises that is indeed beyond the scope of man's laws and codes, one that requires a wisdom beyond that of the sagest among us. I do not expect you to understand our own beliefs and observances. No doubt you would find them as hard to comprehend as I do Thor and his Warhammer. Were I myself faced with such a dilemma as you have before you, I would seek guidance from the powers of earth and ocean. I would seek answers in the patterns of sun, moon, and stars. I would seek the wisdom that lies in the hidden places, the truth that cries in the voice of the wind. Were I to seek out such guidance tonight, I have no doubt as to what I should be told. There is only one man among you who is qualified to make this decision. He is the one man who saw the truth and had the courage to lay it before Somerled at risk of his own life. He knows Somerled better than any of you. Ask Eivind, therefore, to determine the penalty for his friend. The ancestors have made it plain to us from the first that your wolfskin must play a vital part in the unfolding of this tale. Let him choose." As Eivind stood stunned, pride and horror warring within him, and the assembled folk broke into excited talk once more, the sound of Somalid's laughter rang out through the hall, at once bitter, shocked, and genuinely amused.
"By all the gods," Somalid exclaimed. "The wolfskin, who never did learn to put more than 5 runes together and struggle to comprehend the simplest point of law, making the final decision on the life of a king. It's clear the tale you refer to is no heroic saga set out in cunning skaldic verse, but a trifling thing best suited to the drinking halls frequented by such mindless servants of Thor as this fellow you call courageous."
He turned to Magnus, his face now blazing with outrage.
"He bedded her, of course. That's what this is all about. A simple matter of the lusts of the flesh. An impressionable young woman, a yellow-haired warrior they used to call Little Ox. What do you expect? The girl wants him back between her legs, that's all. She just can't get enough."
Red rage welled in Avon's head, blinding and terrible. The voice called in his ear, urging him to action. It would be 3 long paces to Somerled's side, and a matter of moments to lay hands around his neck, give a strategic squeeze, and make an end to his filthy accusations. Everything in him was screaming, "Forward!" Nessa's eyes were on him, and Rona's, and the Jarl's. He drew a long breath. He held himself very still as a standing stone. The red mist cleared, the voice faded. There was, after all, a choice.
If he had once been the mindless servant of Thor, whom someone had described, he was no longer.
It was Rona's voice that rang out now, an old woman's voice, but strong and thrilling. Brother Tighe provided a prompt translation.
"The wise woman asks Somerled if he has forgotten how much can change from spring to spring. He would be wise to recall it, for in a few seasons' space, the wolfskin will be the father of kings, while he himself will be no more than a shadow on the edge of memory." "You astonish me," Magnus said, staring at Rona, who returned his gaze with fierce eyes. "The father of kings? I do not think this can be. I must make it clear to you."
He looked at Nessa now.
"That Eivind was given leave to come here only for a short time. I was most reluctant to release him from my service. Indeed, it was only through the offices of Somerled himself that I gave his friend permission to accompany him. Eivind is foremost among my strike force, and an indispensable member of my personal guard. He's the best warrior we have, and a great favorite on the sporting field. He simply cannot stay on here. Indeed, I believe it was the Lady Nessa's desire that all of us quit these shores without delay. The events of the past year have given her no cause to trust our kind. For now, I plan to respect her wishes and withdraw my forces, both those of Ulf's ill-fated expedition and my own exploratory voyage. Though I have to say, I believe it is inevitable that others will make their way here wanting to settle, whether by force of arms or peaceably. You will not keep these islands to yourself much longer, my dear. Nor will you keep my favorite wolf skin, I think.
Nessa's hands were clutched tightly together. Still, her voice was that of a leader, level and considered. My lord, I thank you for your wisdom in choosing to withdraw your men from the Light Isles. That is a great gain for my people. As to the future, I am not so foolish that I cannot see a time of changes upon us. All I seek is a respite, enough time to prepare. Without that, the wisdom of the ancestors will indeed be lost. My lord, I am not entirely without practicality. Many of our able-bodied men were slain, in the rout at Ramsbeck, in the assault on the Whaleback, or alone and silently while on watch in darkness. Our women and children are strong, but not so strong that they can make up all that was lost. We need help. Your wolfskin, Eivind, is prepared to stay and offer us that, if you will release him. We had hoped that he would stay. The well-controlled voice cracked. It had been a very long time to remain strong.
Your problem can be solved another way, Magnus said.
And Eivind remembered that the Jarl himself had always had a fondness for games.
When I allowed my men to journey here with Ulf, some of them were given leave to stay on and settle. Håkon was one. Alas, Håkon is no longer with us. Thord might be persuaded to remain here. I'm told his woman has taken a liking to the place. I dare say one or two other volunteers may be found, provided you're able to guarantee their safety once the rest of us sail. An easy matter, I think. You should get your complement of able-bodied men.
My lord, Nessa's voice was shaking now. I don't think I have made myself sufficiently clear. My grasp of your tongue is less than perfect, I know. If one or two men wish to stay on, I will consider them. But it is this warrior in particular whom I wish to retain. Someone had grinned.
As I said, he commented.
Mused Magnus with the trace of a smile.
A dilemma, for I too wish to retain him. Let's hear what the man himself has to say. Step forward, Eivind.
He stood before them, his wolfskin on his shoulders, his sword by his side, the beating of his heart now strong and steady. The rage was gone, and with it the last traces of uncertainty. He looked at Nessa.
You know what's in my heart, he said. I have sworn to be guard and protector to your people, and I would do no less for you. It is a lifelong promise. My lord Jarl, I ask to be released from my bond to you and permitted to remain on the islands. You are a fine and fair leader, a model for any man to aspire to. But I must walk on my own path now, and follow the voice within me. Will you let me go?
Lifelong promise, huh? Somerled spat. Our friend here breaks vows and changes allegiance as often as a courtier changes his shirt. What about his oath of loyalty to me? What about his lifelong vow to Thor? You can't trust him, Nessa. He'll serve you a while, then toss you aside as soon as another great cause takes his fancy. Eivind is no hero. He's nothing but a big man with a limited capacity for thought and a newfound penchant for attempting what's just a little beyond him. You'd have been much better to stick to killing, old friend. You're so good at that.
Enough!
Magnus's voice was like a thunderclap. Everyone jumped.
I did not give you leave to speak. Well, Avent.
This in a different tone.
I see a solution here. A test. A test of your ability to carry out the duties this lady seems to envisage for you. We know you are strong and determined. We know you are steadfast and courageous. Now you must show us that you have also learned wisdom. What do you mean, my lord?
Even as he spoke, Avon realized what was intended. A dark matter indeed, the most perilous of games.
You must pronounce sentence on Somerled,
Magnus said quietly.
Lady Nessa herself set you the task, and I think you must pass the test, not simply to satisfy myself and the folk assembled here, but also the lady. If I am content with your judgment, I will release you from my service, and I will consider your offense of disobedience to your chieftain fully acquitted. If your decision fails to please me, or the court, or the lady, then you must honor your vow to me and return to Rogaland with my vessel before next full moon. Once in Freyr's Fjord, I would expect at least another 5 years' service from you. Do you understand me?
Yes, my lord.
Do you need time to consider? This man's life hangs in the balance after all, and he is your brother, sworn in blood. Such a decision is not made lightly.
Odin's bones, can we just get on with this? Somerled's tone was brittle.
I've never known such a tedious, long-winded debate. I need no farther time, Avon said.
His heart was beating hard now, hard and quick. And yet at the same time he felt a curious sort of calm settle over him. There was no need to think about what he would say. The answer was there inside him, arrived complete and unbidden. He turned to face Somerled.
You are indeed my brother, he said quietly. The marks we bear are witness to that bond, and I have done my best to honor it. You think I have betrayed that promise, I know, but it is not so. I have watched you as you made your path through life, as your mind grew ever more cunning, your decisions and your actions harder to understand. I have wondered often what it was that drove you, why the craving for recognition burned in you so strongly that it rendered you blind to the consequences of your actions. It seemed you could see no man's pathway but your own. In time, I recognized the way you had chosen was wrong. It came to me that you had taken an ill turning a long time ago, that you had wandered almost beyond the reach of the most loyal friend. There was a foretelling. You must remember it. Get on with it, will you? Muttered Somerled. It is never too late for a man to go back to that fork in the road and try again, Avon said. Brother Tig would tell you it is just a matter of recognizing you were wrong. You haven't learned how to do that, Somerled. Your eyes are still closed to the possibility, but that does not mean you cannot learn. I have not betrayed our oath. That I speak these words tonight, after all that you have done, is proof of my loyalty to that bond.
What is it you're proposing? To incarcerate me among a gaggle of proselytizing Christians so that I suffer a gradual demise from sheer boredom. Oh, come on, Avent. You know how to do this neatly and quickly. I've seen you dispatch numerous victims with the ruthless touch of an expert hunter. Just get it over, will you? His eyes were shadow dark. A terror of the unknown looked out from their depths. Avent saw that, perhaps for the first time in his life, Somerled had absolutely no idea what to expect from him.
I would not choose imprisonment, Avon said. There is no place here in the islands where you could be held, no place where your life would be worth more than a scrap of straw from the midden. I would not send you back to Rogaland. There's not one among our countrymen would offer you safe passage. Nor would I weigh your penalty in ells of cloth or pieces of silver, for there's no treasure in the world would buy pardon for what you have done.
Then, someone had said with a crooked smile,
there's not much choice, is there? Death at sunrise seems the only remaining option. You know, Avon said. I might once have thought that myself. Indeed, I've come very close to administering your punishment by my own hands. As close as a hair's breadth, I think. I've been contemplating courage, Somerled. I've been called courageous tonight, and it warmed my heart to hear it. But there are far braver folk here.
He looked about him, at Nessa's lovely face, now touched by a delicate pink flush in the cheeks. At Margaret's tight lips and ashen pallor. At Runa standing grim and strong, with the dogs by her side. He looked at Brother Tig, who bore a strapping around his ribs, and bruises on his face.
Fine people who have endured far worse than I ever faced, and remain strong and good. I see in their faces the marks of your cruelty, the scars inflicted by your blind quest for power. And I see in them a strength that you could not combat, for all the grip of fear you placed on our own men, so that they obeyed your will, despite themselves. It seems to me you never stopped to think, to consider. It seems to me you never allowed yourself the time for that.
You hold up girls and old women and weakling priests as models for me.
Somerled had raised his brows, his mouth twisted.
This is ridiculous. There is no logic to your reasoning. These folk are nothing. They are the merest of pawns in the struggle for dominance here. They will not last. Our own kind must prevail. You speak of time. It will not be so long before time proves the truth of my words.
Avon took a deep breath.
You dismiss the priest as weak. Do you know how he and his kind made their way to the shore?
Somerled did not reply. His expression changed almost imperceptibly. He had always been very quick at working out puzzles.
You do know, I see that. But perhaps the Jarl and our newly arrived comrades do not. The brothers came here by sea, in tiny currus of skins and wattles. They set out from their home shore with no map but that of the heart. With no certainty of landfall but that which the voice of their god whispered in their ears. They journeyed under the soft light of the stars and the fierce heat of the midday sun. Little enough they carried with them. A water cask, a fishing line, a book of prayers. They floated at the mercy of ocean surge and treacherous current, driven by storm and gale, on a path known only to whale and seal, to gull and serpent, until the tide cast them up on the shore of the Light Isles. They sent up thanks to their god and made a new life. That is courage, Somerled. It is a shining example to every one of us.
Somerled waited, dark eyes fixed on Avon's face.
I was witness to the sickening sight of your men beating this priest, Avon went on. I heard his voice, steadfast as the blows rained down, calmly reciting the fair words of prayer. A strong man indeed. Let us see if you can be as strong.
A ripple of excited anticipation ran around the hall. Somerled folded his arms.
You propose to administer a beating while I compose verses?
He queried in a show of bravado.
No, my old friend. I would obtain just such a small boat as that which bore Tig and his kind safely across the sea from their homeland. I would place in it a water cask and a fishing line, and on the first tide after sunrise I would set you adrift in this frail craft, on a westerly current into exile. Your path then would be determined by ocean and storm, and your destiny placed in the hands of whatever gods might have mercy on you. My hope would be that you learn wisdom and peace as Brother Tig did. It seems a fitting penalty.
Somerled's eyes had widened. For a moment, stark horror transformed his face as he recognized the finality in Avon's words. Then the mask came down again, and he was once more calm. Avon turned back to Magnus.
This is the sentence I've determined, my lord. I hope you think it satisfactory. You know, Magnus observed expansively, I did think the young lady might be just a little biased when she referred to you as the only man among us capable of making this decision. A wolfskin, young and impetuous, at the mercy of the fierce call to battle. Such a man surely could not possess the wisdom required for such an impossible task. I see now that I was wrong. You are still the same man who charged forward against my enemies, a warrior brave to the point of insanity. That determination and that courage still blaze in your eyes. But you've changed. You have become the man these women see in the future of their islands, the father of kings. Your decision pleases me very well. Are all of you in agreement?
The answering roar of approval made the whole hall shudder. Perhaps they had wanted blood, but there was a satisfaction in this that went beyond that. It was like the working out of an ancient tale, deeply strange and yet somehow inevitable. Surrounded by the clamor of acknowledgement, the pounding of fists on tables, Eivind looked across and saw Nessa's little smile and the warmth in her eyes. And a moment later he saw her turn suddenly white and crumple at the knees. He reached her side in two long strides, catching her in his arms before anyone else had time to move. His heart was pounding. Surely the gods would not be so cruel. Not now, after everything. Sheer exhaustion, Margaret observed, looking as if she herself were barely staying on her feet. And she couldn't eat before. You'd best carry her through to my quarters and I'll tend to her. A very strong girl. She's been through a great deal. Nessa was feather-light in his arms. She was snow-pale and as limp as a doll, her long hair hanging to the floor as he carried her to the chamber she was sharing with Margaret. Ronna followed just behind him, muttering to herself. He laid Nessa down on a pallet and tucked the covers over her. It was necessary then to give way to the wise woman, who produced a little vial, uncorked it and released a powerful, pungent odor that made his nose sting and his eyes water. Nessa's eyelids fluttered. She stirred and opened her eyes. Eivind hovered, expecting to be banished at any moment from this domain of women, yet quite unable to tear his eyes away from her. Now Ronna was pouring water into a cup and putting it in his hand, gesturing. It was Margaret who spoke. "You're being given a little time, I think. Not much. I'm overly weary myself, and do not plan on undressing and getting into bed when there's a wolfskin present. Be quick. There are certain matters still to be attended to, but the two of us won't be long at all." They left. Not without a rather penetrating look from Ronna. It was a warning of sorts. He knew he must continue to meet their expectations, that he would be measured and judged for the rest of his life. That was not such a bad thing. "Did I faint?" Nessa asked as he held the cup to her lips. "I never did that before. Maybe I should have eaten some supper. It's been such a long time, I hardly know if it is night or day."
"Shh," Eivind said, easing her back to the pillows. "Don't try to talk. You must rest."
His thumb lingered by her temple, brushing the soft strands of hair back from her face. She gazed up at him, her eyes slate dark in the lamplit room. "You're sad, aren't you?" she whispered. "Sad that you couldn't make him understand?" Eivind bowed his head, saying nothing. She seemed to see right inside him sometimes, uncovering secrets he had hardly known were hidden there. "And you're sorry you had to do what you did," Nessa said. "But it was right, Evie. You have given him a second chance, a generous gift. He has been less kind in his friendship."
"I don't know. It could be cruel. Such a journey is fraught with peril. It is a voyage across trackless seas. Who knows what landfall may be found before world's end?" "He wanted death."
"And you gave life. A man such as yourself could make no other choice. Evie?"
"Hmm."
"Margaret will be back soon, and Ronna will give you a lecture on keeping me awake, and another on not looking after yourself properly."
"Hmm,"
he said, his fingers stroking her hair where it lay like dark brown silk across her neck and shoulder. "I wish you could stay here," she said in a small voice.
Avon swallowed.
Might I kiss you goodnight, do you think? He ventured.
Despite what had been between them, things seemed different now. He felt a certain constraint, almost as if they were starting all over again, now that death did not overhang them so closely.
Certainly not, Nessa said, but she was smiling. Don't look so crestfallen, Avy. You have a jaw that's covered in bruises and swollen like a ripe fruit, and I happen to know you had a tooth pulled earlier today. Such pursuits must wait.
Her words were lost as he drew her up into his arms again and touched his lips to hers quite gently, for a kiss, after all, can be as light as a butterfly's wing, provided one exercises control. It was only after a moment that her lips parted, and he felt her hands moving against his back and her tongue sliding across his own, jolting his body to instant, painful hardness. The kiss deepened. His fingers slipped inside her tunic to touch the smooth curve of her breast, and then he winced in pain, and Nessa drew away, a little breathless. Laughter and concern mingled in her soft voice.
I told you, one should not attempt so much so soon.
There will be a time for us. It won't be so long to wait.
Will you sleep tonight?
Between the ache of longing in his body and the consideration of what must be done at dawn, Avon thought that unlikely.
I'll try, he told her. Now close your eyes and rest. Perhaps I should go.
Oh no, not yet. Her fingers tightened on his.
Just a little longer then. Though I have to say, to be so near and not to do what I want so badly to do causes me some discomfort.
Nessa smiled. Such discomfort is not solely the province of men, believe me. Still, we must not shock Rona. Perhaps you might put one arm around me, above the blankets, and rest your head here by my shoulder. That feels very good. Maybe I really can sleep.
In fact, when Rona did return not long after, she had to wake him, and as she ordered him off to the men's quarters, there was a smile on her weathered features. Margaret was with her, looking worn out. Ulf's widow would be eager to return home now, Avon thought, back to her family in Rogaland. He bent to touch his lips once more to Nessa's pure brow, to her heavy, shadowed eyelids, and very lightly to her mouth. She was fast asleep. Sleep sweetly, my bright star, my hand in yours. Rona made some further comment, not ungently. He must take steps to learn the language as quickly as he could, so he could talk to her, so he could talk to all of them. He would ask Tig to help him.
Avond, Margaret said dryly, if you're not out of this chamber by the time I count to five, I'll summon your brother to drag you out. Good night and sleep well. You chose wisely tonight.
Wisely, he echoed. I don't know. I'll probably never know.
We must be prepared for troubled dreams, said Margaret. For shadows on the edge of our thoughts. He leaves us that legacy, but we must not let that hold us helpless. Life goes on. We must make of it what we can, I suppose. She sounded so bleak and hopeless, Avon was hard-pressed to summon any response at all. He was saved by Rona, who approached with a cup containing a steaming brew, which smelled even worse than the reviving herbs. It appeared this draught was meant for Margaret. With great relief, Avon slipped from the room and back to the wolfskin sleeping chamber, where two men snored on their pallets already, and his brother waited, ale cup in hand.
Sleep,
Eirik ordered, pointing to the bed that bore the best woolen blankets and the plumpest pillow.
Now.
And suddenly, it did not seem so very hard at all to obey. Nessa thought that was the most difficult moment for Avond, the touching of hands to the little boat as it rocked in the shallows, ready to bear Somerled westward on his journey into exile. For herself, she felt the somber mood of the occasion, the dark solemnity of it. Yet she knew it was at the same time a cleansing. The weight of grief they all carried on their shoulders must be lightened by this man's departure. It was an ending of sorts, necessary before new beginnings could be made. For Eivind, it was different. She could look at Somerled's tight, withdrawn features and feel not a shred of doubt, for she saw there a man who simply did not understand the difference between right and wrong. Eivind saw his friend, a boy for whom he still felt responsible. And she knew that somewhere, deep down, Eivind doubted his own judgment. Even now, after all he had done, the strengths he had shown, the wisdom and leadership, Eivind could not see himself as others did. In his own eyes, he would always be no more than a simple warrior, a man who needed time to understand things, an unsubtle thinker lacking in cleverness. He did not read the admiration and wonder in others' eyes, the Jarls, Margarets, Olafs, at how he had changed and what he had become. He did not understand how astonishing was his acceptance by her own people, the speed with which he had begun to establish that difficult bond. He was quite blind to it. That was one of the reasons she loved him. There was a shadow in his clear blue eyes that morning. Nonetheless, he held himself tall and straight as always, as if he were part of the monumental slab of rock on which he stood. Although the breeze ruffled his hair and stirred the folds of his tunic, he seemed to Nessa an island of stillness. Just so had she seen him on the shore, long ago, before she had known what kind of man he was, before she had understood that he belonged in the islands. Yet in a way she had known, even then. From that moment the spirit that whispered in her ear, "He is part of this tale, your tale, and the tale of the folk. You must hold him fast. Within this warrior's breast beats ancient truth." Nessa was the only woman present on the shore. Margaret had declined the Jarl's invitation to attend. It was plain Ulf's widow had reached the point where she could bear no more. They said someone had given her a letter before he left the settlement, but nobody knew what was in it. As for Margaret, she had not sought an opportunity to speak with her husband's killer in private. Nessa guessed there was a certain piece of information that Somerled did not know, and she wondered at Margaret's decision not to share it with him, but kept her silence. She would have preferred not to be here herself, but with an eye to Avon's pallor and his grim-set jaw, she had accompanied the small group of men to the chosen place. Not three boat lengths out from this narrow, pebbly stretch of shore, a strong westerly current would seize the curragh and bear it away from the islands. Only the most skilled of sailors might turn the craft and steer it back to land. Her cousin Kinnart could have done it. Somerled most certainly could not. It was very quick. Men had worked during the night to place all in readiness. Water barrel, fishing gear, and a small oiled sack of provisions were neatly stowed. There were oars. It was also possible to rig mast and sail. Nessa shivered. The boat was so small. On the shore, Brother Tig stood with his wooden cross in his hands, staring out over the choppy waters. A silence fell. They were waiting for Somerled to step aboard. Nessa had wondered if it would be done without any more words, if now, at the very end, Eivind and Somerled would have nothing to say to each other. Perhaps there was so much to be said that neither men knew where to start. She could feel Avon's grief, even though she did not fully understand it. As for Somerled, he had surprised her this morning. Quiet, calm, dressed in plain, warm clothing, he had walked down between his wolfskin guards with perfect dignity. Nessa was forced to admit that outwardly he had conducted himself in every way like a king.
"It's time," Magnus said. "You'd best be gone. Have you anything you want to say?"
Someone had looked at him.
"Not to you," he said. "But I have a question for Eivind. I told him I preferred death. I made that quite clear. Of course, I was not offered a choice. Tell me, Eivind, what's to stop me from turning the boat around as soon as the current ceases to grip her and coming back to land? The locals will finish me off then, if Nessa's island spirits don't get to me first. What's to stop me from slitting my wrists with a fishing knife? I'm sure there's one on board somewhere. Or I could simply go out a certain distance, then slip overboard and drown. You'll recall from our boyhood that I'm not the strongest of swimmers. Give me one good reason why I should feel bound to comply with this ridiculous punishment.
Several people spoke at once.
Maybe I should go with him.
That was Brother Tige, and his words sparked a horrified, "No!" from Nessa. Several voices, Eric's among them, spoke up telling Summerled to hold his tongue and stop stalling for time. But it was Avon's response that hushed them. He stepped down from the rock, his face ashen, and walked across until he stood not an arm's length from Summerled.
"Here's your reason," he said,
and rolled back his left sleeve to show the long, straight scar on the forearm, sign of their blood bonding.
"Give me your hand. I have not forgotten the oath we swore. You urged me to loyalty. Now I ask you for pledge of that loyalty. Give me your hand, Summerled."
Summerled pushed back his shirt sleeve. He stared at Avent. The dark eyes seemed to devour the blue. Each man clasped the other's left arm. Now one scar overlaid the other, a perfect match.
"Very well," Avent said. "Now I want your solemn vow, given in the spirit of the friendship we promised as lads, that you will do all that is in your power to survive this journey. Swear that you will head onward with the courage I know is in you, with all the cleverness and wit and ingenuity you possess, until you make landfall on a new shore. And you must promise that, once there, you will make a new life and strive to be all that you can be."
He was holding Somerled's gaze with his own, but Nessa knew he could not see what she saw, what made her heart shrink with pity and with sorrow for the two of them. He could not see the love in Somerled's eyes. For her, that moment was a glimpse behind the mask, an insight she would rather not have had. She thought now she knew what was in Somerled's heart. "I would never have been good enough for you, never, no matter how hard I tried, no matter what I achieved. And I can never be the man you are."
"It's a great deal to ask," Summerled said in a whisper, his mouth curving into a wry half-smile. "I don't think I ever required such a demonstration of loyalty from you." "If I did not have faith in you," Avon answered, his own voice scarcely stronger, "I would not ask it. Now swear."
Finally, Summerled had run out of words. He jerked his head in an awkward nod and released Avon's arm abruptly. As he turned to climb into the Curragh, Nessa saw him scrub the back of his hand across one cheek, and then the other. A king does not weep, not where people can see him.
"Really," said Brother Tige, wading into the water. "Really, you should not go alone. Spare me from priestly company, I beg you," Summerled snapped. "I've always much preferred my own. Besides, they're short on translators here, and it's going to take you forever to teach Avon the language. Now get on with this, will you?"
Then Eric and Thord and the other men set their hands to the Curragh's stern and pushed, and Summerled took up the oars and, with reasonable competence, began to row out to sea. Nessa moved forward to take Avon's hand in hers, and now she could see the tears that were running down his cheeks. A wolfskin, it seemed, could weep without shame at such a time of loss. They stood watching until the little boat had been out of sight for some time, until the others had already headed up to the place where the horses were tethered, ready for the ride back to the settlement, and the two of them were alone with the wash of the waves and the call of the gulls. Then Avon wiped his face with his hand, just as Summerled had done, and put his arm around Nessa's shoulders, and they set their steps away from the sea. She saw Avon's sorrow and his doubt and wanted to comfort him with her counsel, with her body. But it was a busy time, and privacy was hard to come by. Before Magnus sailed home to Rogaland, he had determined to take stock of what Ulf had begun, and to deploy his own forces in the restoration of what Somerled had destroyed. Nessa made it known as courteously as she could that the folk would manage quite well with the help they had chosen for themselves, Eivind and Thord and one or two others. Her argument was strengthened by the arrival, one afternoon in dazzling spring rain, of no less than 20 of her own people, fishermen and farmers from the far outer islands, come to her aid after word had finally reached them of the slaughter of their kinsmen. Most were grey-haired, and the rest little more than boys. But that did nothing to dampen the fire of dedication in their eyes, or mute the ring of fierce commitment in their voices as they knelt before her one by one, each offering himself as her warrior. It would have made her weep once. Now she gave each her hand, and each his own solemn words of recognition and acceptance. She explained to them all afterward who Eivind was and what he'd done. He was her husband, her partner from this day on. Their union lacked but the formal ceremony of handfasting, and that would take place when spring was at its peak. She did not add the words of clarification, "when the others are gone," but this was understood. Eivind would stand by her side. He would help her lead them. He would teach them what they needed to know, to get ready for the new times, when the islands were no longer a place apart from the rest of the world. The lads eyed the golden-haired giant with excited anticipation, scarcely tinged with caution. The older men would take longer to win over, but she did not doubt that they too, in time, would follow the wolfskin to the jaws of death if he called them there. That thought made Nessa shiver, as if a breath of cold had passed through her. So much change, every day brought something new. The times of long, silent meditation, the nights of communion with the ancestors, seemed distant memories. And she grieved for the loss of that utter stillness, that space for setting the spirits at rights. Still, this was her choice. She would be a mother before next winter, so Rona said. Though how the wise woman could know was a mystery. The ships were ready, the golden dragon proud and sleek at its mooring, the blockish Knarr, and Magnus's pride and joy, the new vessel he had named Lady Hilda, after his wife. Perhaps he had sought by that to sweeten her toward him in view of yet another departure. This time, she would get him back sooner than she expected. The men were eager to be off. Eivind would be saying farewell to his brother. Eirik had sorely missed his woman and his young sons, and vowed never to sail so far again. Indeed, he was heard to tell his fellow wolfskins over the ale cups, he'd have fancied to give up the calling of Thor altogether, and go back to Hammersby to lend his mother a hand on the farm. At 25, he was getting a little long in the tooth for the finer points of wielding sword, club, and axe. The others greeted this with uproarious laughter, telling him he'd never do it. He wouldn't last one season on the land before he'd be back among them on the longship's prow, sniffing out Danes. But Eivind told Nessa they were wrong. He knew his brother, and he had seen the longing for home in Eric's eyes. There would be others staying in the Light Isles besides Eivind and Thord. The Thord's woman had already made quite a name for herself in Hafnarfjallr as a cook. What she could create from the simplest ingredients had grown men lining up with their places, begging for second helpings. She was a lively girl, admired as much for her saucy manner and outrageous jokes as for her baking. That she had once been a thrall was of no import here. One afternoon, as Nessa snatched a few moments quiet on a bench outside the hall, Margaret came to sit beside her. Ulf's widow seemed nervous, twisting a handkerchief between her hands. It was clear she wanted to say something, but she hesitated, as if unsure how to begin. Nessa waited, hands resting in her lap. At her feet lay shadow. Gard was away with Eivind and Thord, bringing up some timbers that had washed into the beach.
I wanted to ask you something,
Margaret blurted out eventually.
Of course, said Nessa. I can't go home.
Margaret's words came out in a rush now, as if she must say them all before her courage failed her.
Everyone expects me to go, but I just can't. Would you let me stay here? I could make myself useful. I can order a household. I know how to keep a reckoning and organize stores. Maybe I could do some of the work I would have done if Ulf hadn't... If he hadn't... Sweet Freya, aid me!
She buried her face in her hands.
I just can't do it. It's hopeless. How can I even say it? Oh, please.
Nessa waited a little. Margaret was not crying. She would not do that in the open, even though there were only the two of them about. But her pose, shoulders drooping, head down, neck exposed beneath the heavy bundle of auburn hair, spoke of a helpless despair. "Rona says I'm going to have a child at the end of autumn," Nessa said tranquilly. "It was a bit of a surprise. You're the first person I've told, apart from Evand." Margaret gave a choked gurgle that might have been laughter.
"A small, yellow-haired warrior. You are full of surprises."
"Rona says it will be a girl. But I expect there will be little wolfskins as well, in due course." There was a long pause.
"My own child will be born far earlier than that," Margaret said in a whisper. "But alas, not soon enough to be called my husband's son. Though no doubt the brat will bear some sort of family resemblance." Her tone was bitter. "You understand why I'm reluctant to return home to Rogaland. How could I begin to break such news to my parents? And yet, I know I am foolish to ask you for help. I expect you can hardly wait to see me gone from this shore. Why would you want to give shelter to Somerled's child?"
"Your child is welcome here, Margaret," said Nessa gently. "He'll be a son of the islands. It will be up to you, as his mother, to foster his growing and teach him what your own parents taught you. Strength, forbearance, and generosity. As for yourself, you must earn your place here. That much I ask of all who make the choice to stay."
"Your people must hate me," Margaret said. But there was hope in her voice now.
She straightened her back, lifted her head.
"After what was done, after the killings, how can they—"
"As I said, you must earn your place. You'll be watched, you all will. But my people remember how you helped them in the time of the sickness. In due course, I think you will be accepted, and I will value your skills and your friendship, for I never expected to be a leader of men and women, not in this way. My path has changed, and I cannot always face it with courage."
"I fear greatly to have a child," Margaret said in a low voice. "Although for me, that would have come about eventually. It is the prospect of this particular child that disquiets me. He was not conceived in love. I don't know if I can be a good mother to him. I think I may hate him."
"Look at me on the day he is born, and tell me that again," said Nessa. "And perhaps I may believe it. We are lucky that we have Rona. Why not ask her to seek answers in the fire? She will tell you something of the child if she can." Margaret shivered.
"I don't think so. I would rather not know. Nessa?"
"Yes."
"My little maid, Gunhild. Might she stay as well, and my men, Bjorn and Ash? They are loyal, all of them. They will not want to leave me."
Nessa frowned. "Gunhild can stay. You'll have need of her. The men must speak to Evand. He will decide. Each must plead his own case and show himself worthy. If your faith in them is justified, perhaps we may keep them."
"They are good workers," Margaret said eagerly. "I promise you—"
"As I said, you should speak to Evand. It is his choice. I do not set myself up in place of a king here. There are difficult times ahead of us. I intend that we should all face them together. I'll be glad of your help, Margaret."
Nessa put out a hand. A moment later she felt the cold touch of Margaret's fingers grasping hers.
They sat in silence a while, side by side. Then Margaret said,
"Thank you, oh gods. I'm going to be sick again."
"It will pass," Nessa said, holding the other girl's head as she doubled over, and wondering how long it might be before this particular malady struck her as well. "I promise you, it will pass." Magnus was true to his word. The ships had been gathered together at the safe harbor for final repairs. At the second full moon, they sailed for Freyrsfjord, and Eivind waved goodbye to Eirik and his old comrades, Erlind and Holger. It was a strangely assorted company that stood on the hillside above Hafnarvagr, where the sweep of sheltered water spreads out before the dazzled viewer like an ever-changing shawl of lustrous blues and greys and greens all the way across to High Island. In springtime, that stretch of sea is a vessel of light whose loveliness quiets the heart. They watched in silence as the oars dipped and rose, and the fleet moved farther and farther away across the silver of the bay, threading between the isles on the perilous journey back to the home shores of Rogaland. One might have looked at these people, Nessa thought, and wondered what future the islands could have under their care. There was pale, silent Margaret with her woolen shawl hugged around her, and beside her a small, tight circle of protectors, young Gunhild, pink-cheeked and anxious, and the two stalwart guards, Ash and Bjorn. Behind them were two other men of Ulf's household. All had convinced Eivind of their worth and loyalty. To Nessa's right stood Runa, tall and straight, with her iron-grey plait and her shrewd, far-seeing eyes, and beside her the slight, unassuming figure of Brother Tig. Thank all the powers he had not followed his first instinct and jumped into that boat with Sommerled. How would they ever have managed without this brave, calm little man? On the sloping sward below Nessa, Thord stood with wolfskin on shoulders, a hand lifted in salute as the golden dragon hoisted her sail to catch the westerly wind. Thord's woman, Zaira, watched the ships pass with a dimpled smile. She had it in her to give, that one. Nessa had seen it. And she loved the place. Already among the island women, Zaira had a wide circle of friends. Even thus, quietly and without any fuss at all, is the torn fabric of community mended. Give us time, Nessa prayed, closing her eyes. Give us long enough, so this can be. Eivind was not standing alone this time. He had a lad on either side, and his arms around their shoulders. At his feet the two dogs stood, guardians, companions, messengers. Who knew what they were in truth? Close by, seven of her own men, clad in island colours, sky blue, sea green, blood red, stood in a watchful group. And Grimm was there, a surprised affection this, which had not pleased Magnus at all. But he had made the most of it. Seeing this most hard-bitten of warriors would not change his mind again. One of the young men from Sandy Island seemed to be glancing at Gunhild rather often, and Gunhild's pink cheeks were positively glowing. Time, Nessa begged again. It is not so much to ask for. Make time. Runa had come up beside her and spoke in a manner Nessa had grown used to over the years. Runa could not read minds exactly. She simply seemed to know things without needing to be told. Maybe that was the sight. Maybe just an old woman's acute powers of observation. For him, especially. Take him away a while. Space and quiet he needs now. Time to grieve and time to be comforted. You can give him that, and take some for yourself as well. But Nessa hardly knew where to start. There were so many objections to this. So much to do, so few of them to manage it. Stock to be tended, boats repaired, dikes mended so the tender grain, planted almost too late to be guided by the season's rhythm, might not now be mown too early by hungry sheep, or wandering cow, or foraging hare. They must divide responsibilities and set to work, and she must travel to the outer islands to visit her people there and reassure them. How could she take time? He seems strong, Runa said quietly. Already they gather around him. He will continue to grow. Whatever challenges the world sets him, he will meet bravely. But he's still a very young man, Nessa, and he has bid the last of his family farewell today. You, who have lost so much, know how that feels. Take time for each other. Trust us. We'll get on with things until you're ready to come back. Thus it was that, on a day when the sky was a cloudless warm blue, and the sweet grasses of the Light Isles were dotted with flowers of many hues, blush pink, sun yellow, dusky violet. Avond and Nessa made their way on foot, each bearing a small pack, up to the west and along the shore near the whaleback, to a place where a burned-out